Welcome to another edition of Linking the Travel Industry, where we discuss popular and interesting travel industry posts which appeared on LinkedIn during the last week, and occasionally we might talk about stories which appeared elsewhere. This session is being recorded, as it will be made available as a podcast afterwards, which you can find at businesstravel360.com, and we'll give you more details about that at the end of the session. We absolutely welcome audience participation, so if you have a comment on any of the stories we discuss here today, please raise your hand and we'll get you on stage. We encourage different views on stories, so don't be shy to share your take on anything we discuss here today. And remember that this is being recorded, so we're participating in to give us your permission to include what you've said in the podcast. If you are from the press, we welcome your coverage of what's being said, but please do obtain permission from whomever in this room you wish to quote. So with that out of the way, my name is Rian, and I'm one of your hosts today. I'm the CEO of Agentivity, where we provide travel management companies with insight, control, and growth through the effective use of their data. My co-hosts are Anne and Ash. Guys, thank you for joining me again today. How have you been?
Thank you, Rian. Hi, good to be here. Doing very well. And I'm Anne Cedarhall. I work as a consultant freelance in the travel space with both LeapShift and ExploreTech.
Hi, everybody. This is Ash, and just want to thank everybody for joining today's session. I am a podcast host with a podcast called What's Up in Business Travel, where we tell you all about the business travel news in under 15 minutes. And I also am the vice president of sales at Traxo.
Well, thank you both. And Ash, again, I'm very envious that you are a GPTO and I'm not. So, but let's move on with the stories. So, the format is we tend to talk about some of the posts that I did last week and then anything else that comes up. But let's start with the first story. We talked about, I posted about Indian Airline Indigo, who is coming up with a very interesting way to embark and disembark on the aircraft with making use of three doors on and off the aircraft. Now, in itself, I don't think it was such a major post for me, but the comments and the sort of interaction on that post was very interesting. And Erica Armstrong specifically, who talked about that post, didn't think it was such a great idea because from a practicality perspective, it might not be easy to implement. But what did you guys make of that story, if it indeed it is a story?
I fully agree that the complexity of, it's a great idea, but it is provided, of course, that the airport can facilitate it. I mean, I don't know how many times you even experienced that you can't even disembark or embark using the rear door because, you know, some airports just don't facilitate it. So I'm a bit of a question mark when it comes to this. I don't, you know, what's the point if it's not facilitated?
Well, and I think this has been an age-old problem. It still continues to be a problem today, right? Like if you look at the entire journey and the process that a traveler goes through, most difficult parts is the onboarding part. I mean, obviously, if you're, you know, group one or you're the executive folks and all that stuff, then maybe it's not so bad. The way airlines have tried to solve that problem, right? So you have different airlines doing different things. You have some airlines that actually board people window first. Some people board by the back of the plane. And there's actually different studies that have been done on how to get people on and off the plane quickly. So I think Indigo was trying something different, setting up the spider. It looks like a spider to me when I saw that. Nonetheless, I think what they're trying to do is solve the problem of trying to get people on and off the plane. On the way here to GBTA, I was actually dealing with the exact same thing. And I thought it was kind of interesting. That was on the Friday post, and Saturday I was there online. And, you know, this queuing up process, getting on the plane, not finding a space for your bag, it's pretty nasty.
It is. The study, do you remember, Ash, regarding the study, is it more efficient to actually board people by, you know, window first? It ought to be.
Yes. And I was actually trying to find that study again, because when I read it, I was just like, oh, this is nice. But I didn't realize that it was going to be on a post on Friday. Otherwise, I would have remembered the name. But there's actually, and when I find it, I'll bring it up on the next session, or if I find it today, I'll mention it again. But I think that there is methods by which people have proven that there is a way to get people on and off the plane with the least distress. The current methods are not working. So whatever they're doing today, no one likes it.
Yeah. Just before we go on, I just want to shout out to some familiar faces in the audience. Thank you for, you know, taking part and taking the time to listen to us today. I can see Mark there, Sue, Harold, Chris, Miguel just joined, but then he left. Maybe something we said. Vicky, hi to you. Thank you guys for joining us. It's very nice to see you. And again, if you have any comments, please just raise your hand. We'll get you on stage. No problem. If we can move on, I was expecting Alexandra to be in the audience today, but she's not. This week we are talking about her story. So Alexandra posted last week about the most tracked flight in history. And this was about the Nancy Pelosi flight. Was tracked, you know, heavily. And her post was not necessarily about that, but it was about the vast amount of data that we now suddenly have access to and can instantly see. And it was an interesting post from that perspective, I have to say. And if you have to stand back and think about what we have access to today versus even 5 or 6 years ago, it is incredible what we can see. So I thought that post was interesting from that perspective. I don't know whether you have a comment on that, Anosh.
Well, can we talk about the political side of it?
Ideally not. But... you go first.
I was curious to hear what you all thought about it, actually, from a political perspective.
I do think standing up for what you know, firmly believe in, I think that's great. So, yes, I'm all for it. But it sounded a bit risky to me what she was doing. But anyway, that's as far as my political comment will go.
Hey, Andy's here. What's up, Andy? So from a data perspective, I will say this, that I think Alex is right. I mean, it's pretty amazing the things that we can do in today's world, right? I mean, it wasn't too long ago when none of this stuff was possible. But today, you know, we can track flights. We can track the flight before our flight to make sure that the flight that we're going to take is actually going to happen on time because the flight before actually left on time. So the level of sophistication that, you know, we have and the ability to be able to bring all this information together, whether it's flight radar doing it, there's just hundreds of apps on your phone today that you can access all this stuff with. So it's pretty remarkable.
What I can see in the industry, though, on the downside is that in many cases, a consumer or traveler, you know, is obviously aware of an issue before their agent might be in that scenario because of that access to that knowledge so instantly. And that's a frustrating point for the industry that I think needs to be addressed.
These companies like FlightStats, they have a lot of agency tools that one can use to keep track of flights, right? And this is all real-time information. So in my previous life, I had implemented a service by which we were anticipating the traveler's flight results before the flight even happened and prioritizing those travelers and reaching out to them and those kind of things. So right. I think that there's definitely things that people can do in the travel industry today based on the tools. You know, you have to kind of give up on the idea that the GDS is my only source of data and move past that. And once you move past that and go into the thing called the internet, there's tons of content available. And you just have to make that part of your standing operating procedure. And if you do those kind of things, then you think your travelers are going to really benefit from a higher degree of service.
Let me move on to the Australian airline Qantas asking their executives, their people on their, you know, very high up in the company to go in and work as baggage handlers. The story was everywhere on my feed. So many people reposted about this. I have some comments on it, but what did you guys make of that?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think it's great. I actually think it should be done within airlines to go in and work in different areas. And I don't think it's a bad idea at all, especially under the circumstances that are right now. But I've seen a lot of upset people in comments about this. So
why were they upset?
I guess they were terribly upset of doing a job not within their description, or I guess that takes away, erodes the value of what they're actually doing in the airline on a day-to-day basis, I assume.
Pretty short-sighted. It makes for a great photo op.
Yeah, it does. It really is great marketing.
But isn't there just a practical side to it? And wasn't the reason mostly that they didn't have to get those people through additional security checks and so on? They already passed those things, so that made it possible for those people to work at the airport. Wasn't that one of the reasons, do you think?
If there were other reasons for within the airline, I wouldn't, you know, I would assume, I mean, if I were to do it or make that kind of decision, again, I say that it's extremely good. It's very valuable to understand all the aspects of an airline. And I actually have airline buddies who are, you know, a friend is a software developer, but has actually been hands-on with luggage within his airline. And I think it's great because you really do get an understanding of what's going on and what's happening. And like in his case, he was able to solve and actually improve functionality for the airline. So I think there are only benefits.
You know, here in the U.S., Rian, you know, Gary Kelly, who was the ex-CEO of Southwest, he used to do this quite often, actually. He would just show up at the Dallas airport, which we, you know, where he lived, and he would just start to check people in at the kiosk machines.
Wow.
Yeah, and he would take bags, and he would put the stickers in the bags, and he would throw the bags on the ramp. And he did that pretty regularly, where it just became the norm. And nobody was surprised by it. It wasn't like, oh, my God, Gary Kelly's picking up bags. But he actually looked at it as a sign of value, and he was, you know, close to the process, and he understood his company really well. And, you know, we all know Southwest has such a great name in the industry, right? And travelers love them, and, you know, all these little things trickle down. So I think when people get out of the corner offices and they come down into the main floor and they actually work with their employees, it's really a good thing.
Absolutely. I'm all for it. I mean, somebody tagged me, I think it was Mike Ball from, I can't remember the agency name, but he tagged me about saying, I would probably want to see this for the CEO of Heathrow, because I posted about him recently. And I said, absolutely. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Another big story last week was from Sabre, who bought or was in the process of buying ConfirmaPay, you know, a company they've worked with, you know, fairly closely for a long time. I really like John Harvey's post about this. He went into a lot of detail as to why he thinks this is a good move, and he even shared a little graphic he wrote on a couple of years ago where he thought this would be the direction it's going in, and so it did. For me, that was an interesting read from John's perspective. What did you guys make of that story?
I mean, very, very interesting read for me as well. I'm extremely interested in payments, and I think it's so critical. It's one of those elements that are, you know, really, really matters most. And there's just so much happening and so much going on in payments. And it's been sort of always on this sort of, you know, not being a sexy topic kind of thing. So always on the back burner, or people just say, oh, payments, oh, how dreadful, dreadfully boring, and don't really want to listen. But I don't really know enough. So it's also a very, very good read for me. It is one of the most important areas at the moment. Your thoughts on that, Ash?
Well, I mean, Sabre has been working with Confirmer for many years, right? They developed the Sabre virtual payment technology for Sabre. So I think that the relationship was there, and I think it made sense for them to make the move to buy it. You know, the virtual, you know, I look at this from just from a virtual payment perspective. I know there's a much bigger picture here that talks about payment overall. I think that the time for us to become virtual payment oriented, and even our personal lives, forget about travel and business lives, I think we're there now. And I know banks have been pushing for virtual cards, and, you know, we have the technology, the devices on our phones, and we can create virtual card payments whenever we want. And I can't wait for that day to happen.
John Harvey is suggesting that this was going to create strong, you know, competition on that side. It's going to create a lot of potential innovation again, and, you know, get some excitement back into travel, because, you know, now there's opportunity for them to differentiate the offering. But yes, whether that could have been remain in the partnership or had to be via the purchase is up for them, obviously, to tell us.
That's an interesting, I think it's a very interesting aspect, because, you know, I don't really find Amadeus Payments as not the most innovative. And I was really hoping for more innovation from Amadeus Payments, but I don't really think that we're seeing so much. And I really hope that we can see innovation here for Sabre with Confirma.
Nice to see you, Chris. Welcome from Canada, right?
Two things, really. One is, you know, the opportunity for virtual payment, for sure. It's interesting, me moving from the UK to Canada. I'm surprised by the banking system. It's almost like going back 30 years or something. In the UK, standard get a Visa or a MasterCard sort of debit card. Here, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but you don't. So they solution that by giving you a virtual payment card. I don't know if that's Confirmer who's generating that. But it means that, you know, virtual payments is becoming, I wouldn't say the norm. I think most people have a credit card to solution that, but it's interesting that that's the thing. But my question to you is, I found it interesting in the way that this was kind of discovered, right? That it wasn't sort of a big ticket news item. It was more which of the sort of trade magazines found it, but it seemed to have kind of like been discovered by the sort of CEO of Confirmer stepping down, and that's how the news broke. I'm just interested in your take on that.
I agree with Chris, actually, because the story was kind of almost suppressed. You know, it didn't come out because the schedule of when that actually took place was days before. And Company Dime actually mentioned the story for the first time. And even then, it was kind of like, by the way. So it was something that I thought, I agree with Chris. It was definitely, you know, not a big story and no one really wanted to talk about it. So that was definitely very curious. I like the way Chris thinks. He's yes. he's thinking a little differently here. Absolutely. I like it. So,
the next big news, BCD Travel, who invest heavily in Fairfly. It's quite a big deal. I mean, it's they're quoting $10 to $15 million spend per year over 5 years. That's a massive spend. It's obviously good news for Fairfly. And, you know, I do like what they do there. Any thoughts on that?
Many thoughts on that. I was very curious about the article. From an airline perspective, of course, it's what airlines hate. All this robotics, you know, looking for rebooking and finding fares again, right? The so-called famous excess transactions. But I found it remarkable. I've actually found it here in the article, is that they guarantee that the same seat is rebooked again. And I read that and I thought, how is that even technically possible?
I have a thought on that. And I think a very small percentage of those bookings will come with a seat booked. I think that's why they get away with that, maybe.
Yeah, but the chances of that happening, though, Rian, is so small, right? I mean, I know that people have a fear of losing the seat assignment in this process because when you cancel a segment, you rebook the segment, you lost the seat assignment, right? But I think that the timeline this happens in is so quick. I mean, you're literally canceling the segment, selling the segment again, and then you already know what the seat number was from the record. So now you could just buy the same seat again. I think it's 1 in 1,000 where it doesn't happen.
No, I would agree. I mean, like I also said, I think very few of those bookings are repriced at that early stage in the process actually comes with a seat reservation. So, you know, that might be one of the ways they get away with it.
I'm still intrigued. I really have to reach out to them and ask them about it because, I mean, I would... You know, thousands, there can be millions of robotics being involved at the same time. And that seat could actually be gone in, you know, in.
And I find your other angle that you brought up actually far more interesting as well, that this about the fact that nobody's mentioning the excessive transactions that these guys might definitely incur, right? Because there are now extra transactions on that booking.
Yeah, but there's never, but then of course, there's never the amount of extra excess transaction in the scope of corporate bookings as there are for leisure bookings. So the volume is far higher with leisure bookings than it is with corporate bookings. But of course, robotics cause excess transactions. Yes. They do.
But they're not running it on all the bookings, right? So if you think about it, what the real bookings that they're focused in on is the high value tickets, right?
Yeah.
They're focused, I mean, you know, they have thresholds. So I had implemented the service in my previous life, but you know, every transaction that was under $500, we eliminated it. So you don't really end up with that much. But when you do find that opportunity, mostly it's like on the high end, you know, first class, business class type of tickets. That's where the opportunity is great. And if you use things like Google Price Monitor, you know, they have a really nice sophisticated process of alerting travelers today that those services are really nice on like if you look at a first class ticket, you can cut the cost by quite a bit when fares change. And one of those tickets in a month will generate enough savings to make it worth it.
Didn't sit right with me in that story, Anne, was the fact that they mentioned Fairfly as a startup. I mean, I think they've been around for some time. So that was a bit strange for me.
Well, I mean, repricing, like you were saying, has been around for as long as I can remember.
Exactly.
And it's just been the automation of it that has become more and more efficient or, you know, different. Back in the day, I mean, like, you know, let's back up the tape. I guess it was going on, 30 years ago at least, right?
Yep.
And it was probably done most manually. But the automation has been around for over 20 years in it.
I mean, back when I was an agent, we used to keep PNRs in our queue on high-value tickets. Yes. And we would reprice them every morning to help the client, and clients got that service. I mean, agents were doing those kind of things, you know, back in those days before even technology was available.
Good for BCD to invest in that space. And, you know, obviously there's going to be good returns for their customers. So
But Rian, they're behind the eight ball. BCD is, you know, yeah. They haven't been able to. Everybody else has already done this. So they're finally doing it, which is good. But yeah. Competition has already moved forward.
Yeah, our next story is about United Airlines, who's put down some real, you know, money. I believe there's about $10 million in down payments for electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. There we go, eVTOL aircraft from a company I haven't heard of, you know, before. So this is great, right? They're putting their money where their mouth is. Ash, what did you make of this?
I love it. I think that, I mean, you take New York, for example, right? The idea behind this is to take people to the airports. Yep. These are like mini helicopters, yeah, type of thing, right? So, you know, just New York City, you go New York City JFK, it's like 15 miles, 20 kilometers or something to that nature. But it can be the worst experience of your life because the roads are so crappy into JFK that people can leave their home, leave New York City like 2-3 hours ahead of schedule and still not make their flight. And there's no rhyme or reason behind when this happens. So I think that the airlines are doing a great job. I think we need to change how, I mean, I'd like one to stop by my backyard and pick me up and take me to the airport. That'll be nice.
This article actually made my week. I mean, I'm so impressed with United. I'm so impressed with what they do. I just loved that interview. And that is real sustainability work. I really loved her explanation as to why they're not using any offsetting. And that was like music to my ears because, I mean, we were discussing it last week and I said, I don't believe that offsetting and, you know, when we were looking at the Lufthansa fares, I don't like it that much, right? I think it's the airline's responsibility and I think it's what they can do in the space and really invest. And it was just, like I said, music. I love it, love it. You know, the enthusiasm, the engagement, the forward thinking, and just kudos to United.
Scott Kirby has, I think we have to appreciate what he's done at United. I mean, United was not in a good place, I would say, pre-pandemic. But he's really taken this time during the last couple of years where, you know, things were not looking so great, and he's transformed United, and he's made United very strong. And you know, I mean, kudos to him. I think he's done. You know, I mean, I think he doesn't get as much, you know, appreciation for what he's done, but he's changed that airline around, and the impression of people about United has changed drastically. I mean, he's turned it around 180.
He certainly has, and I know some people who work at United, and everyone seems to be so happy, and there is so much vision and so much, you know, forward thinking. It's just amazing to see. Like you said, a sort of typical legacy airline that you never expected to turn around in this fashion. And so they've done it. It's kudos to them.
And then moving on to another airline, and the news that Turkish Airlines has fully recovered after the pandemic from a financial perspective. And again, a very interesting article. I'm not sure I would have classified them as a European airline. I mean, that's how they came up in the article. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, again, kudos to them for recovering. And I know, you know, during the pandemic, you could see that they were aggressively getting back onto their routes and even expanding. And so I think it's wonderful news that they are fully recovered.
Yes, that is fantastic news that they have fully recovered. And it is, again, a very impressive airline. And it can't be very easy coming from that market with one of the highest inflations, etc. But they are an incredibly strong airline. Very, very impressive.
Isn't Turkey in Europe? Where is Turkey exactly?
Well, there is a European Turkey and there is an Asia Turkey.
Turkey is in the crossroads, is it not, between Europe and Asia?
Yes.
It is, exactly. And so, to be fair,
it could be either way. I mean, they could have called it anything.
Probably, yes. I just wouldn't. I mean, if you tell me European airline, I wouldn't think of Turkish Airlines as a European airline. So maybe that's me. But there we go.
You're a little bit closer to this, Rian, than all of us. So you have a different perspective.
I'm right.
Probably a more real one. Yeah, exactly. You're right. That's right.
Now, those were the stories I posted about last week. I had a few extras. Before I get to my extras, any extra stories from your side?
The one that I thought was quite good, and I don't know if you picked up on this, but Amsterdam Airport has launched a compensation program for travelers who missed their flights because of lengthy delays. I think this is the first this has ever happened where an airport took responsibility for what's happening and not said it's the airline's fault. and they haven't figured out how much the compensation program will cost the airport. The program is for anybody who booked flights between April 23rd and August 11th, arrived to the airport on time but missed their flights because they were stuck in queue. So the costs include recovering, the rebooking of the flight, extra travel costs, accommodations, transport activities that the travel had to miss or lose money on. I think this is the first of its kind.
I didn't see that story, but that is great news. I think it's very good for the consumer. Absolutely.
I did see that story. And what's even funnier was that I was going to bring up that story myself.
Ah, Rian, if you listen to What's Up in Business Travel every Monday morning, you know, you'll know the story.
I think it's excellent. That is really showing responsibility, because I think it's been tragic this summer. Yeah. Families losing €4,000, yes. Right? And everyone's sort of just saying, oh, well, it's not our problem, is it?
Now, I have two extra stories, but Anne, did you have another one, or did Ashnell steal your story?
Actually, you can go for Ash did steal my story.
It was interesting for me to see that Tim Clark at Emirates is asking Airbus to build an even bigger aircraft. Now that there are lighter materials available and better technologies available, etc., I thought he had a lot of very, very good reasons why he wanted bigger aircraft, but I just can't see that happening at all. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, how much bigger? Like, how big do you want it?
Well, he thinks the A380 is a bit small. He wants bigger than that.
I mean, I think it's nice for him to want it. It doesn't mean that the airline, yeah. I mean, the manufacturing companies are going to build it.
Ash, did you have another story apart from the one you just stole from Anne?
Well, you know, I'm kind of impressed with myself that I was thinking along Anne's lines. And, you know, if you start doing that, then you know you're elevating your game. So clearly these Monday weekly calls have helped my intelligence levels improve quite a bit. So very happy to join.
From my side, I just want to thank Anne and Ash. Thank you very much for again, chipping in and participating. Ash, especially you that got up so early or stayed awake. I can't tell. Yes. But either way, enjoy GBTA. And for those in the audience, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
As a reminder to everybody, we host this LinkedIn audio call every week on Monday, and it's all about linking the travel industry. Please do share this with everybody that you know so we can keep this session growing. For those who cannot make it because of time zone or availability, please know that this session will be available as a podcast on businesstravel360.com, and you can subscribe to it by searching Business Travel 360 on any of your podcast directories. And with that, thank you, everybody, for being here.